Good morning, and welcome to the 2008 Sunstone Symposium. This is session 233, LDS Church Media Coverage and Image. My name is Rory Swenson. I'll be moderating this panel. Before we begin, I'd like to remind everyone to please turn off their any noise-making devices. Cell phones. If you have other noise-making devices, please don't use them. Once we have the presentations and some panel discussion, we will open it up to questions or comments. When you do so, please use one of the microphones so that we can make sure that we get it onto the audio recordings. The abstract for this is growing media coverage of the LDS Church, its members and practices, creates some interesting situations for the church and its image. Church leaders frame political issues as moral causes and call for support. Church public relations must explain the distinctions between mainstream Mormonism and splinter groups making headlines. Church involvement in political issues can cause ripples and tensions overseas. How does the church redirect or appropriate the media scrutiny directed at it? What are the consequences of heightened media scrutiny, and how does the church respond? How does it handle unintended consequences of its efforts or decisions? Today on the panel, we have Rod Decker. Mr. Decker is a Salt Lake City icon. He's a news reporter, talk show host, and troubler of the comfortable for the last 26 years at KUTV News Channel 2. He has degrees from the University of Utah, University of Chicago, and was also a Nieman Fellow at Harvard. In addition to his long reporting career, which included 8 years as a columnist and editorial writer at the Deseret News, he's the author of a mystery novel. It's published by Signature Books, called An Environment for Murder, and it's set in Utah. He's married to Christine Decker, a juvenile court judge, and they have 3 children. Following Mr. Decker, Peg McEntee. She is the assistant managing editor for news and business at the Salt Lake Tribune, where she has worked for 14 years. For nearly 10 of those years, she was a religion editor, among other duties, and she came to the Tribune from the Associated Press, where she began reporting on the LDS Church and other faiths in 1988. She has 1 daughter, who's a college student at UC Santa Cruz. And finally, we'll have D. Michael Quinn. He has a PhD in history from Yale University, he's well known. Former professor of history at Brigham Young University. He's won many awards for his teaching, including Professor of the Year. He's an independent scholar living in Southern California, and he recently finished a year. Oh, I should have read this first. How do you pronounce it? Beinecke?
Oh, yeah, just
he's a scholar.
Yeah,
Beinecke. Yeah, Beinecke scholar. Beinecke's senior fellow at Yale University, and is an affiliated scholar at the University of Southern California Center for Feminist Research. So we will proceed with Mr. Decker.
Thanks. I'll talk about the church and its image. The church has always had trouble with media. You'll remember that in Carthage, there was the Carthage Expositor. That what it exposed was polygamy, and what it said was largely true. Nonetheless, the Carthage City Council, under the direction of Joseph Smith, met, declared it a nuisance, and declared it to have spoken falsely, wrecked the paper, scattered the type, drove out the editor, and that's what led to Joseph Smith's incarceration in the Carthage jail. Trouble with media. Here in the valley, everyone who didn't like the church started a newspaper. There was the Union Vedette, and the Valley Tan, and the Salt Lake Tribune. The church now has a professional PR department, and they try to get along with media and to burnish their image. The church PR department, I think, has 3 things, mostly, that it says, or tries to say. Its message is, first, we are Christian, but we are different. Second, if you are a Mormon, you have to work at it. We're active. will take up a big space in your life. And third, will make you happy. Now, all of those things seem to me at least arguably true. And that's what the church PR department tries to say. It seems to me there is a fundamental problem with church PR. It's something like an oxymoron. Public relations, of course, is a business activity. It began with business, and it continues. And it tries to help businesses succeed. And the idea of PR is that the customer is always right. PR tries to conform both in image and to some extent in reality to what people want. There's a sociologist, David Reisman, wrote in the 1950s, and he had a term for this. It was other-directed. You try to get along with people, and your values are those which get along. You're other-directed. In Reisman terms, the church seems to me to be inner-directed. It tries to act according to principle. It tries to look at what is right and its view of what is right and then act according to that. That's different from PR. Now, nonetheless, the church would like to get along with the world. If you're an Orthodox Mormon, the way you say it is this: we try to follow the teachings of God. That's first. That's what we do. But we also try to be good neighbors. That's one of the teachings of God. And we do our very best to follow the teachings of God first and to be good neighbors second, and we would like to be seen for as people who follow the teachings of God and try to be good neighbors. That's the way you say it if you're an Orthodox Mormon. But suppose you're, say, an academic sociologist. Then the way you say it is, you note, for example, that this inner-directedness requires a certain tension between the church and society. This is an old Christian tradition. Christians have always seen themselves as in the world but not of it. Blessed are ye when men shall persecute you and revile you and say all manner of evil against you. Christians have always thought that one of the signs that you're doing the right thing is when a lot of other people say you're doing the wrong thing. And Mormons believe that now. If you're an academic sociologist, what you say is the Mormon church needs, looks for, requires occasions to set itself apart from the world, occasions to be different, occasions to find ways that can be justified to themselves, to act differently from the way ordinary people act, from the way civilians act. Now, they don't want to be too different. Polygamy was too different. Didn't work. But they want to be different to the right extent. Not drinking. That's just about right. Different, and it was maybe more different in earlier times, and you coupled it with not smoking, which is fashionable now. To be different in the right way, to the right degree. That's what the church, an academic sociologist would say, that's what the church needs. And it looks for ways to be different. One of the chief ways the church is different, and this seems to me to be an historical irony, is that the church is a rearguard redoubt of 19th century Protestant morality. In the 19th century, the church took on Protestant morality head on, polygamy. Hardly anything made 19th century Victorian moralists like President Grant or President Hayes or Mr. Newman, chaplain to President Grant, hardly anything made them more upset than polygamy. Really upset them. And the church insisted on polygamy and took him on. Church got beat. After that, the church changed its morality. The church changed, for example, on drinking. The church was not, it was against a lot of drinking, but drinking wasn't the most prominent thing, and it wasn't a clear commandment until the 20th century. Then the church changed on drinking and became more like the Protestants. The Protestants were the prohibitionists. They were the ones who had strong views against drinking. The church changed mostly on family. It changed its idea of family, of the best family being the polygamous family, to the best, indeed the only good family, being the monogamous family. And the church now defends monogamy against extramarital sex, against homosexuality, against feminism, against all comers. Ironically, while the church seized and holds on as an iron rod, grasps the iron rod of 19th century Protestant morality, Protestantism changed too. And while there are now Protestants who still believe in 19th century Protestant morality, there are a lot more of them that believe in something quite different. So the church has become a rearguard redoubt of the morality of those 19th century Protestants who denounced the Mormons then and jailed them. And one of the ways that the church is different now is that it adheres strongly to this traditional morality, sticks up for it in politics, uses it to distinguish itself from the world. Now, I have one final point. Friedrich Nietzsche said, if God did not exist, it would be necessary to invent him. And I don't know if that's true of God. It seems to me it's probably true of the Mormon Church. If you think of Mormonism, say imagine that you're a biologist or a businessman. If you were to think of Mormonism, you would, if you were a businessman, you say, what we really need is a grocery store in Eagle Mountain. There's a place for a grocery store in Eagle Mountain. Those guys have to travel into Lehi to buy groceries, too far. If you're a biologist, you say, there's a niche, an ecological niche for raccoons or boa constrictors or whatever. And there is, it seems to me, in the human heart and human society now, that kind of place for the LDS Church. They grow, they succeed, they help a lot of people to make sense of the world, to live their lives, to sort of dance gracefully to the music of time. And if you didn't have that, you'd need something like it for these people. And so it seems to me that when you talk of church PR, you need to say, you need to understand that the church doesn't want really good PR. They want, they have to have dissonance, a kind of Christian dissonance between themselves and the world. And they'd like to be well thought of, but only in their own terms. And if they get too well thought of, the leaders of the church sometimes seem like a person who's been walking so long against a stiff wind, in this case enlightened public opinion or enlightened liberal opinion, that if the wind stopped, he fears he'd lose his sense of direction. They need a dissonance. And so when we talk of the church image and the church PR, to some extent, they need a troubled image. They want a difficult PR. Thank you.
I cannot match such heights of eloquence, so I won't try. I sort of take a different view of, I agree with a lot of what Rod had to say. He and I both are in the same business. We have to produce news products every day, 365 days a year. And so I look at, I've been thinking about what we would maybe talk about today, and I look back at starting with the Olympics. The Olympics were a gift for God, from God, for Utah, right? I mean, the scandal couldn't have been more delicious. You know, the world is welcome here. You know, the Light the Fire Within, which we at the paper, of course, called Fight the Liar Within. So, but, oh, okay, I'm sorry. Is that better?
Yes.
Okay. So, and then we have the Knight in Shining Armor, Mitt Romney, who comes in, more on Mitt later, who cleans up the games, all is well. We have another delicious scandal in the skating, but the LDS Church responds in a really remarkable way to me in terms of, we're not going to proselytize. They held classes on how not to proselytize when you're working with the public. Peggy Stack wrote about that for our paper. I think it was one of our best stories out of the Olympics. But they made the church made the world welcome here. And that was a huge achievement, I believe. You know, we had a great games. Everything went very well. Tick forward in time a little bit, and Mitt Romney is running for president. What happens? The eyes of the world are upon Mormonism in a completely different way. The polls alone must have just shocked the people at the church office building. So many people said they wouldn't trust Mormons, they don't know anything about them, they know the wrong things about them. I can only imagine the sweat on the brows in the PR office during that period. And the outreach, you know, the outgoing, the sending emissaries out to the big media corporations and so forth to try to educate people about the truth about Mormonism. And that must have been tough duty. That must have been very, very difficult. And Romney now, I mean, if he's chosen to be the vice president candidate of the United States, it's all going to happen again. So it must have been just hard for these people to figure out what to do. You know, President Hinckley was a genius at this kind of stuff. He had come up, we all know the story, he had come up through the ranks of the church. He was going to be a reporter before he became in the early 20th century, got into basically creating a PR department for the LDS Church. He was very good at this kind of stuff. He charmed the world on Mike Wallace and what's that CNN guy?
Larry King!
Sorry, I was having a brain drain there. And he really became the face of the church. Just a charming, affable man. But he was extremely smart as well about the nature and necessity of church PR. And then we had this year, well, going on, my paper started covering the FLDS in 2004. And then came Texas. And it was another unbelievably difficult time for the church because there was so much confusion in terms of who fundamentalist Mormon became this battleground set of words here. And trying to explain the differences, you know, and I don't think I've ever written a story about polygamy or edited a story about polygamy that doesn't have the line, the church walked away from polygamy in 1890 as a condition of statehood. Boom. We never fail to put that in our stories because we have to make that differentiation. We're very, very conscientious about that. But another difficult time for church PR. So, you know, blessings and curses, I guess you would say, if you were a religiously minded person. But it's pretty interesting. And now that I think Mike Otterson now is the head of church PR, and he's a sharp guy out of Australia, and I think he probably will be pretty savvy about how to handle this stuff in the future. So I will watch as an editor and overseeing coverage of a lot of these issues very, very carefully in the next few years to see what else happens. I mean, it's just nothing stops happening. That's a great thing about the news business. Is somebody in a movie once said, my Tuesdays are never the same as my Mondays. So it's been a real experience being involved with this coverage. And thank you very much.
I'd like to emphasize three anecdotes about this topic that indicate three inside the church dimensions of this issue of the media and the LDS Church. 6 years ago, First Presidency Counselor J. Reuben Clark complained to a magazine editor about an article that the magazine had recently published about the LDS Church. And Clark used his own anecdote of an American diplomat whose limo was careening into an inevitable crash. "For heaven's sake," he told the chauffeur, "smash into something cheap." Counselor Clark resented the fact that the nation's media of his day on the East Coast and West Coast embarrassed Mormons with impunity because the editors expected no losses in subscribers or advertising revenues. One day, Clark told the editor, "We will not be so cheap, and it will not be so cheap to run into us." For the next half century, LDS headquarters, through political alliances and financial advances and various power alliances and cultural alliances, have made an effort to make sure that the national media would hesitate before publishing something that offended the Mormons. And if you want to see an explanation for the highly intricate linkage of financial enterprises that are operated by the church that have national and in some cases international significance, the stock market investments, the largest ranching operation in the United States, to name just a few of those issues. If you want to understand why that is, it's a fulfillment of J. Reuben Clark's warning that one day it will not be cheap for the media to smash into us. There's going to be a price to pay. So that's one dimension of the media and the LDS Church. Another dimension is another anecdote, and I heard this privately, but I think I also read it in Sherry Dew's biography of Gordon B. Hinckley, that on one occasion his response to a media article about some element of the Mormon past was, "Why are they writing this now?" And the obvious meaning was that this was a difficult time for the church and that this news media article did not help things for the church. The underlying irony of it is that there is never a good time for the national media or the local media or the Mormon media or the independent media to talk about anything that the LDS leadership finds embarrassing. There's never a good time. So it will always be the question, why now? The third anecdote I learned about 30 years ago, I heard about 30 years ago from one of the chief members of the church's PR department, who I won't identify. But he said that his job was similar to a sergeant walking with the general toward an airplane that was about to take off and they were going to board. And the sergeant tells the general, "Sir, as we approach the plane, the props are moving. Be sure not to get too close to the props. That could be dangerous." They advance another 10 feet, and the sergeant again tells the general, "Sir, be sure to stay very clear of those moving props because that propeller could cause you a problem." And then as the PR representative for the church says, the general walks in with the prop anyway. On that note, and those three dimensions, I'll end my formal remarks and leave it for discussion from the audience as well as the panel.
As we begin this discussion, a little more informal, a couple questions come to mind. The first one I'd like the panelists to kind of think about and address is what is it about the media that we as Mormons simply don't get? You know, what the tension between the members and the news outlets, in your experience, what could we learn?
I don't know that Mormons are any different than any other religious group in wanting their particular story told in the way that they want it told. As religion editor at the Tribune, you know, we work with Utah has a wonderful diversity of religious traditions here. And all of them would bark at us if we don't do it the way they want it done. That said, we have to do it the way we report, investigate, how careful we are in our wording, how well we do our fact-checking, how broad our source base is, all of those sorts of things. And so I would hope that LDS people reading our paper and any other reputable paper, I'm making reputable important here, that understand that we are news gatherers. We are not PR people. And if I, for example, a little thing that bothers a lot of people is we don't use, say, President Hinckley on every reference, President Monson on every reference. Second reference, we simply go to the last name. This offends a lot of people deeply. We should be, and I want to say, we don't say President Bush on every. We don't say Pope Benedict on every. But it's the little things. But the little things, I think, bespeak the bigger things. In that, I hope that people of all faiths would understand that religion coverage is a huge part of what we do. It's our franchise, I think, in this state, and. We are open to criticism. We're open to suggestion. We certainly welcome the voices on the phone, in emails, all of that, on the comment boards, although those can be, as you probably know, pretty treacherous. So that's a simple thing. I would also wonder if a lot of people, and I've had this, we're called the adversary. We are called the enemy. We are called, you know, names I can't say in polite company. And I, you know, we're tough. We can take that. But I hope that people would understand that we are news gatherers and disseminators. That's what we do.
In Utah, the Salt Lake Tribune is and always has been the voice of the Gentiles. And it's more the voice of the Gentiles now maybe than it was 40 or 50 years ago, but that's the Salt Lake Tribune. And so there's a certain tension there. The media is a modern institution. If you read, say, the New Testament or the Old Testament, you'll find shoemakers and farmers and wine merchants and publicans. You won't find any reporters. They didn't have. Find lawyers, find doctors. No reporters. Reporting is a modern institution. And reporting reflects modern values. The values now, I guess, that it reflects are personal freedom, equality of rights, and the secular public life. That's what journalists, by and large, believe in. There are surveys, notably by the Pew Foundation, and it shows that's the sort of thing that reporters believe in. Mormons and the LDS Church believe in those values, but to a much lesser extent, and they believe in other values. Since the Enlightenment, modern people have sort of made fun of religious people. That's what they do. Voltaire did. Peg McEntee does it. Oh, she does it. They sort of laugh at it a little bit. Maybe not always in a mean way. There's a fundamental tension there, and there will be. What I said or tried to say is the Mormons want some press trouble. The big evidence that I point to is look how much they have. They have it all the time. They're not dumb. If they didn't want it, they wouldn't have so much.
As an outsider to the print media, in the sense of not being a reporter, not having been trained as a journalist, I have a different perspective, but it's certainly not the perspective of the LDS Church, and it's not the perspective of the average person on the street about print media and electronic media. But the one thing I would say is that there are certain frustrations felt on every side every time there is a media story. And one of the frustrations involves the typical pattern that a news gatherer is usually playing a game of, or not an game, an endeavor of catch-up, of trying to learn quickly something that the news gatherer is not trying to understand the terminology, trying to understand the worldview, trying to understand the sensitivities, the major events, whether that news gatherer is talking to a survivor of a crash or a political event or a series of events or a religious experience. That news gatherer, at some level in his or her profession, is playing catch-up, trying to learn very quickly a very unfamiliar terrain. And in the process of that communication, things don't get presented the way the subject of the story prefers it. And that's almost a universal frustration. Whether it's a politician, whether it's a survivor of an airplane accident, whether it's a religious leader, no matter what the subject of the news gatherer and eventually the news report may be, the subject of that interview, the persons involved, will feel this is an inadequate presentation of my point of view, my history, my activities, whatever. And the irony is that the media themselves feel that way when they're evaluated by other media. There are media watchdogs, both on the cable news stations, as well as in print media, as well as in professional journals of journalism, which critique media coverage. And whether it's the New York Times or the Los Angeles Times or the Salt Lake Tribune or the Deseret News, people there feel resentment in that you didn't portray us fairly. So this frustration is felt no matter who is the subject of the media story. And it's a question of the speed at which the media has to operate and the condensation that's necessary for telling a story. I mean, you know, anyone who's read anything I've written knows that condensation is not one of my strong points. And imagine the difficulty that somebody has who has, at best, a weekly deadline, very often a 12-hour deadline, or sometimes a 2-hour deadline, in getting a story from scratch into the presentation, whether it's electronic media or print media. And so that is just an inevitable part of freedom of the press, is that everyone's ox feels like they've been gored.
I have a question.
Can you set up the mic? Can you use the mic?
Yeah.
one of the questions in which the church is facing some opposition. And I just wonder if it's any different now than it was originally when the church opposed the gay marriage in California. Is it different now? I have a feeling that they are not having the smooth sailing that they had before. That there are people that within the church that are now saying, I know people who are homosexual, and I feel resentful that you are now going to put your money and your publicity to put this amendment through. Is it different now?
This is really interesting because I was having a conversation with Peggy Stagg yesterday, and she said, you know, things aren't going so well in the anti-gay marriage thing in California. And I said, road trip! But yeah, we've been hearing about that. And I think in Prop 22, there was some pushback, but basically it was... you know, a lot of people kind of got with the program that the church wanted them to. I think there is, this is another, really another age, and, you know, California, with the laws that have passed, the court decisions that have come up, I think probably a broader view, broader-minded view by a lot of LDS people, I really do think we need to get over there and start talking to people and... it would be really, really interesting to see, and what the bite back is. You know, you called into councils. Are you talking to the bishop more than you used to? You know, if you don't agree with this position, I think that's a real. You pointed out a really interesting.
There's a lot of rumblings. I've talked to a lot of people in my ward, and they say, you know, with all the problems in the world, the war in Iraq, global warming, health care for kids, you know, tobacco regulation, drug driving, why are they singling out this issue to be the one we have to focus on?
Right.
This issue would put the bite on you to kick in $100 or $1,000 or whatever.
Right.
And they don't understand why...
Can I get your name and phone number?
You're a warden stick.
So people are accepting it very grudgingly.
That's yeah.
I got the difference between now and 2000 when the first thing went through.
Right.
I've been in Utah now for about 6 weeks from my home in Southern California, and at the time that I left, the message had not been sent out, and even though I was expecting something, a media representative called me from the East Coast and said, what's going to happen? And I said, well, I've seen no signs, no lawn signs. I haven't seen any billboards relating to this. But I told the media reporter from one of the Boston newspapers, I said, well, all it will take is a phone call from Salt Lake and there'll be thousands of lawn signs all over. Well, I haven't been to in my community in Southern California since that letter went out, so I don't know. But all I can say is that it just warms the cockles of my heart to hear that there is pushback, and I hope that there is a lot of it, because it was very disappointing what happened with the campaign for the anti-gay marriage in 2000. The vote came in 2000, but it was started as a campaign by the church in 1999. And I know from anecdotal reports in many different directions that parents of gay children felt obligated to vote against an amendment that would have given their children the opportunity of legal recognition and a legal status for their long-term relationships. And I have a feeling, at least I hope this is true, and I hope these reports indicated that that will no longer be true, that there will be thousands of loyal members of the LDS Church who cannot bring themselves to vote for something which would deprive now what the California Supreme Court has stated is a right of gay and lesbians to have civil marriage. And I think it's going to be very difficult for these families, for loyal Mormons, to vote again, to take away, essentially, in this election, what the Supreme Court has conferred as a right of gay and lesbians in California.
I had two questions and one comment, but I'll make it short, I promise. First of all, where can we get hold of information about the church's holdings? And it seems like the media should provide something like that, or at least give some link. I don't know. It's pretty tough to find out what the church owns. Second of all, I was wondering what the media does as far as fact-checking when they receive some PR information from the church. I was on an LDS mission, and I cringe when I hear about these, the numbers of the members of the church, or how fast the church is growing, because I don't know how many inactive converts there are. And thirdly, I guess I've been a little disappointed with the media not providing more of a context on the distinctions and similarities between FLDS and LDS, and the fact that they grow up together and that there is this.
Yes.
The Mormon church still does believe in polygamy, and it's just on hold until the next life. And in fact, things like the fact that men can be sealed to two women in the temple now, but not vice versa. That's it.
One man, one woman doesn't hold in the next life, right?
Sex doctrine, covenants remains intact. We have found it very, very difficult to talk about holdings of the church because it's so closely held information. I think that the last time somebody really did a good job on it, a couple of times, Time took a crack at it, and the Arizona Republic many years ago took a crack at it. So that's a tough one. I know some of the people who worked on the team that did it for the Arizona Republic, and it took four people almost a year to compile the information. That was when I was at the AP. We condensed all that information, and the Tribune did run part of it. In these times, I don't think I could put together a four-person team to spend a year on one thing. That's kind of an issue. And as for fact-checking, we have pretty stringent rules about fact-checking. And we have actually written stories about, the retention rates in the church and you've got the 13 million number versus how many millions don't go to church every Sunday and aren't involved. Some of it is anecdotal. We had a couple of apostles in our editor's office a few years ago, and they asked one of them, what about church retention in Europe? It's obviously apostle. And he, no problem, everything's fine. Already yet. And what were you disappointed about again?
Oh, just the context of the difference.
Oh yeah. And we have tried. We very much have tried. And again, we sometimes think that what we know we've conveyed in a timely and appropriate way. And sometimes I think, well, we wrote about that in 2002. So I take your point. That's good.
After the Arizona Republic and after Time Magazine, the church guys I talked to who knew stuff said, no, they got it wrong. And they said it very smugly, and I think probably the church guys at least thought they got it wrong. So I don't know. Those are the two that I know of, and I don't know what, and I wouldn't trust either one of them. Probably they were incomplete. Probably the church said, ha ha, they didn't see the stuff we have in the drawer. but I don't know. I want to talk a little bit about gay marriage and polygamy. It seems to me that the reason to allow gay marriage is a principle. And the principle is this, that people ought to be able to arrange their private lives as they choose, so long as they don't hurt other people. And hurting other people is you interpret it where you can in favor of the people doing the choosing. People ought to be able to love whom they wish and have and live with whom they wish and arrange their families the way they wish. That seems to me to be the principle. Now, if you believe in that principle, then it seems to me you also believe that polygamy should be legal. Not maybe with underage girls or not with underage girls, but surely if people should be able to live the way they want and arrange their families the way they want, and the law ought to make way for love, then consenting adults should be able to live in polygamy if that's what they choose. And it seems to me on the FLDS, we went over and over trying to on the difference of the LDS Church and the FLDS Church. I confess I was a little disappointed with the LDS Church. The raid in Texas seemed to me to be dishonest and mean-spirited, as well as illegal, as it turned out. And I should have hoped that the LDS Church might have said a word for treating everybody justly, even polygamists.
On the insistence of the LDS Church for clarifications of the distinctions between fundamentalist Mormons and the LDS Church, there's a supreme irony here that I don't think the media, even in Salt Lake, point out enough. And that is that, on the one hand, the LDS Church officially repeatedly says that evangelical Christians have no right to define what a Christian is. They have no right, they have no exclusive claim to that title. Anyone who believes in Jesus Christ is a Christian. On the other hand, the LDS Church says, even though current polygamists believe in the Book of Mormon, they have no right to claim the name Mormon. And to that degree, the LDS Church is playing the same game that evangelical Christians do with the term Christian. That Mormon fundamentalist is as appropriate a term as Christian Mormon is.
You have stated, B. Michael Quinn, that it will not be cheap for the media to run into the LDS Church anymore. I'd like to tell you an instance in 1948 when I was in Trenton, New Jersey, as a missionary. We knocked on a door, and some teenage children, I don't know if they were over 18 or not, came to the door, and I made the mistake of saying, angels don't have wings. And the father of that home brought us into court, and we stood before the judge, and he cited that thing. Well, the next day, the newspaper came out on the front page with a big board, black border all around the story, and said, two Mormon missionaries kicking on doors and running around town on bicycles, huddling small children on the streets, telling them that angels don't have wings. I wondered what we could have done if we sued them then. I want to know if there's any lawsuits that the church has now entered into because the media has slandered.
What did the judge do? What did the judge do?
Well, we had to go to trial. And we got two people that we were teaching on that same street. They were our witnesses for us, and we said we weren't kicking on doors, we weren't running around town on bicycles, huddling small children on the streets and telling them the angels don't have wings. And two people defended us very much. And also, I knew a Jewish person, a rabbi in town. I told him the problem. And he said, well, we used to go to his meetings too. He said, I know that judge, and I'll put in a good word for you. So then the judge said, we want to tell you, you can't tell anything to young children without their parents' permission. I'll let you off this time.
That's pretty good. Don't say no more.
I hope I can be succinct, but I'd like to see things addressed in the viewpoint of outside of Utah, where the church is understood. And I work in the media in D.C., and I run into several things lately. I remember the change when the church really took a move to educate the media, and the guidelines went out, and people were available to consult when they're, you know, were writing for writers, for reporters, writing about the church. And about the same time, they stopped identifying. It seemed like the articles would come up, and if so-and-so, a Mormon, committed a crime, you know, they wouldn't say so-and-so, a Catholic, committed a crime. And that disappeared. They stopped. That was out. So for a while, things seemed to be kind of normal, and I mean, there were the Newsweek cover stories, two big cover stories. People seemed to become educated. I was getting real mainstream. DC media, because of the prominent Mormons in that area, you know, looked on favorably. And all of a sudden, things happened. I mean, U.S. News used to even come to me and say, when Gordon Hinckley became president, is it Gordon B. Hinckley? Say Gordon B. Hinckley or Gordon Hinckley? I mean, they were sensitive to these things. And then, you know, I thought, well, yeah, we always say Gordon B. Hinckley. And use that middle initial. But they were sensitive to this and wanted to get it right. Then all of a sudden, things seemed to turn around. And we have U.S. News, who had that sensitivity, turn around and they put Mormons in a book called Secret Societies. And it's not really the Mormons. When you look inside, it's not the Mormons, it's the Mormons. But we're on the front, you know, we're in the headline, you know, this is what it's about. They put out a book on, I think it was religious leaders, I don't remember now, and they had, and somebody let it go by with John Smith instead of Joseph Smith.
We can't hear.
It's just thing that
works. As Edwin Romney came up, it was like anything goes. Nobody all of a sudden knew anything about Mormons because in the media, because the fundamentalists or whoever, just this was their chance. I mean, they were getting a voice, and I thought an unfair voice in the media for views that you would not let, prejudicial views you would not let, you know, anyone say about a Jew or a Catholic or anything, and they were giving a voice. I was editing at a news, for a news service, and you know how fast you have to work, you know, being from AP, and cutting out whole paragraphs where, you know, they were giving two paragraphs to some guy outside the diner ragging on Mormons. You know, it didn't have anything to do with it. And I'd hear a reporter over this, you know, over the aisle, calling up to check on polls and saying, and feeding the question, aren't people afraid of, you know, that he's a Mormon? You know, what's the feeling? You know, nobody was giving him that information. He was putting it out. So they were grabbing any little, you know, this is kind of interesting, this is sensational, you know, this is what people want to read, and feeding it. And then all of a sudden, nobody, or, you know, we weren't mainstream anymore. All of a sudden, we were pretty weird and lost all that ground, I think. And I just wanted to get your views on, you know, what happens now? What do we do about that? How do we accept that? I mean, should we be accepting that?
Well,
I think you're right that times have changed for the worse in terms of Mormon and public relations, but it seems to me they go up and down, and this is a blip. When Mitt Romney's father ran for president, he got beat, but nobody gave him a hard time about being a Mormon. Being a Mormon wasn't an issue. Partly maybe because it was very close to John F. Kennedy, and people who made the case for religious tolerance, and people were feeling that we ought to tolerate religion. Since then, religion has become more important in politics with the evangelicals as conservatives and as an important factor in the Republican Party. Politics have become more acrimonious, and it seems to me that Mitt Romney probably got beat by evangelicals in Iowa. And if he'd have won Iowa, maybe he'd now be the nominee. And it seemed to me that religion was immensely important. Now, what happens in the future? Well, I don't know. I would guess that eventually people won't care so much about it as they have in the past, or as they do now.
I think I really think that if you are finding errors and mischaracterizations in any particular news outlet, hit them in the head with it. Don't let it pass. You know, that's why we have public forums. That's why we have the comments on the board. But you know, reasonable people can go to an editor or reporter. I get calls all the time, and if that individual is correct and we have messed up, we will do the best we can to fix it. But I would say that if you're truly offended or the truth has been dangerously warped, then brace them. You know, our checks are our readers, our listeners, our viewers. And I think, rise up. You know, you want to call and give me an earful at the office, I'll sit there and listen to you until you call me awful names, and then I'll hang up. But there are avenues that you can change what people are saying. And some people are arrogant and won't listen to you, but I think most of us are, we want to get it right. But you're the, you could throw the tomatoes from the balcony if you want to, and we have to listen.
All the years, I'm not an LDS person, but all the years I was growing up, I was taught from television commercials who the Mormons were. We are brought to you by the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, the Mormons. And then there was a big thing, we're not the Mormons, we're Latter-day Saints, and you can't use Mormon anymore except for Mormon Tabernacle Choir, and you can't use LDS. But if you want to read about people who do, go to lds.org. I noticed after that big flap, they restored www.mormon.com on the back of a little bus that hauls people from the airport to go on a temple tour. So, number one, are you Mormons or not? Number two, but I think I use that as an illustration of what sometimes seems to outsiders as a hypersensitivity and controlling attitude towards outsiders. Like, you've got to, so if you go to lds.org, you have all these complaints, we've been misrepresented here. And it comes across, and plus there's a little bit of a reputation there on the newsroom of, well, we'll tell you what we believe in true words, but it won't necessarily convey to you what we really believe. And so that does produce a sense of distrust, and it isn't good PR, despite everybody has a right to a fair story. I don't know, just a comment, I guess.
Well, I think one of the problems, maybe the major problem, is that there's a certain schizophrenia operating in Mormon society about PR as well as about the media. And it also affects this issue of use of Mormon or not, because essentially that's a PR question. Mormon was originally used as Mormonite against those who believed in the Book of Mormon, and then it was shortened to Mormons. That's a derisive term. And 2,000 years ago, Christian was used in a similar way as a derisive term for those who believed in Jesus Christ. Eventually, Christian became accepted, and not only accepted, it became the official term for those who believed in Jesus Christ. And, you know, think of us as second century Christianity as Mormons. We're not there yet. We're not at the point where we can comfortably accept Mormon as our designation. And so it goes back and forth. There are times when, for convenience, as a shorthand, we accept it, we use it among ourselves. And yet other times when we bristle, and the leadership bristles at the use of the term. And then there are those times when the LDS leadership claims exclusive proprietary rights over the term. You cannot call Mormon fundamentalists Mormon. That's an inappropriate use of that name. We're the only Mormons. And by the way, don't call us Mormon.
What did Christians call themselves when Christian was derogatory?
That I don't know. It's you have the New Testament statement that I think it was Antioch. Yeah. That it was Antioch where the name Christian was first used, and it was used by pagans to describe the followers of Jesus. And it might have been some derivation of Jesus that they defined themselves as. I don't know.
I think that Mormon fell into temporary disrepute because the church thought, people are saying we're not Christians. We are Christians. What can we do? We can make people say the Church of Jesus Christ. If people say the Church of Jesus Christ, then it's hard to say the Church of Jesus Christ is not Christian. And I think that's what happened. Now I think they decided that Mormon's okay, and they aren't going to solve the problem with making people say the Church of Jesus Christ.
We just, one thing, when they changed the size of the type,
yeah.
You know, so it was the Church of Jesus Christ. A lot of fun with that in the newsroom. But I can't add anything to what he's telling us.
With respect to the California effort and the feedback, I know of one ward and one state where the state president and the bishop, prior to the reading of the letter in the wards because of the covert media, they received a copy of one of Carol Pearson's books, which they read, which they gave thanks for, and which caused that letter to be read very quietly in the sacrament meeting. Very little response. There's also quite a nice website that has, I believe it's the Mormons Against the Proposition. It has a lot of quotes of the church leaders through the years that help support your feelings about this. With respect to the church holdings, although you don't get a lot of detail, it's fun to go up to the Capitol building and review the public records that have to be signed by the president of the church. And these are available. All you have to do is ask for them. Quite enlightening. A question. What is the size of the staff of the Salt Lake Tribune, of the Deseret News, what are their respective circulations, and how is the electronic revolution increasing or decreasing or affecting your circulation?
What's the name of the website?
You'd have to Google it. It's Mormons opposed to the
against Proposition 8 or something like that.
As to the size of the staff, our staff is right about 160 right now. That's on the news site. That, you know, we are a member of the joint operating agreement with the along with the Deseret News, with what's now called Media One, used to be NAC, and they handle the advertising, printing, and circulation of the newspaper. I'm not exactly sure how big the D News is now. They did have those layoffs, so I couldn't give you an accurate number. I would guess it's probably not a lot smaller than ours. Our circulation daily is probably around 125, 130, and someday probably 135 to 140. D News is about half of that, as I understand it. And then the web is our world. We have embraced it completely. We have, and I believe the Deseret News probably, I think any organization has it. KUTV's got a website. Everybody's got a website. But we have actually created a web desk. We have web editors. We have people who scan the you know, every news source in the state for stuff to, and elsewhere to put on our site. All of our staff and all of our editors are keenly aware that if you get a story, you get three graphs on the web first, report it out, add more graphs, just like the old wire service as we used to do. Everybody wonders, will there be papers in the next 10 years? I heartily hope so, because nothing gives me more pleasure than reading the Sunday paper in bed with my coffee. But I don't know. I would like to think that there would be some remnant of the paper for people like me. You know. But yeah, the whole web thing is huge, and it will get nothing but future. My daughter doesn't read the paper. She reads the web. And she doesn't just read the Tribune. She reads anything she wants to out there. She very well kind of keeps up with current affairs and all of that, but not from print.
You heard her say that she wonders if papers are going to be here in 10 years. Well, yeah, they're going to be here in 10 years. Don't know in 50. TV news, our heyday has passed. TV news, when I started at the Deseret News as a reporter, there were three TV stations and two public TV stations. Now there's an infinite number of cable TV stations, satellite TV stations. The audience divides, and things have changed for us. We're still profitable, but the golden age of TV news has passed. In both the case of papers and of TV news, the audience is old. If you watch network news, look at the commercials. They're for Depends. Look at them. They are. Okay. I want to say something about dissent in the LDS Church on political grounds. It always gets a lot of play. But in politics in America, everyone aspires to be like the LDS Church. If labor unions could say, we're for so-and-so, and get their people out to march the way Mormons march, they'd be much better off than they are politically. Feminists, anybody would like to have what the LDS Church has, where they can deliberate, they can come up with a position, and their troops move.
Ditto.
This is a, I like your comments on the 4-hour PBS special last year. I know how my friends felt, how I felt, but how did the media experts feel? Was it accurate portrayal? They leave things out.
I hate to tell you this. I didn't see the first 2 hours. I saw the second 2 hours. And I thought it was fairly okay. I mean, I can't think of anything that just leaped out at me and, you know, this is a terrible mistake or a mischaracterization. I think it was an earnest attempt at putting that story, you know, into 4 hours, which is, Michael Quinn knows, would be very difficult for a lot of us. And so that's really my impression. I've read things in other media around the Olympics. Larry Wright of the New Yorker wrote a story in the New Yorker, one of my favorite magazines, about the church, and I was so disappointed. I thought, you know, so I think worse jobs have been done.
I didn't see it. I really liked it.
I wanted to bring up one of the recent brouhahas with the LDS Church and PR, the excommunication of the young man who put together the shirtless missionary calendar. Rod, you say that the church wants to, I guess, have headlines so people are talking about it, or that if it wasn't in trouble, then it would want to get in more. On that particular story, I think they kind of stepped in it, because the kind of attention that they're getting for excommunicating someone, going, you know, for something that didn't seem all that awful, just seems like it's getting really bad PR for them. It makes the church look really reactionary and backward. Comments?
As someone who admires men's underwear commercials, and advertisements, I must say that I saw more skin in ZCMI underwear commercials published in the Deseret News and Salt Lake Tribune in the 90s when I lived here than was in that men's return missionary kind of skin calendar that young man was excommunicated for. By that standard, the president of ZCMI and the president of its marketing division should have been excommunicated in the 1990s.
Probably they would have done better to ignore it. However, you say it makes them appear backward and retrograde. Well, they want to appear a little backward and retrograde. They want to be a little backward and retrograde. They want to be a force that says you shouldn't be showing hunky RMs. And so while, I mean, I'm not defending the decision, it doesn't seem to me that it's any sort of catastrophe. And while they would have done better to shrug, maybe we also would do better to shrug.
I concur. I have someone who, when I saw the calendar, it helped me get through a really long afternoon meeting one day.
Questions, one for Mike and one for Rod. I was out of the country for some of the LDS news stories, so did the Mormon Church blatantly come out and say not to call them Mormon? And for Rod, you mentioned Mitt Romney losing Iowa because the evangelicals wanted Huckabee. Would you say that Romney lost out because he was Mormon, or was it more with... Now I'm having a
freeze the guy that is nominated.
McCain.
So with John McCain kind of winning quite handily, even in the face of talk conservative radio against him, was it really a rejection of Romney being a Mormon who was running as conservative regardless of what he was in the past, or was it more of a rejection of wanting a conservative president?
Aside from the raid on the FLDS compound in Texas, there has been a long pattern, including statements at General Conference by Gordon B. Hinckley, among others, that it's simply wrong to use the name Mormon with regard to fundamentalists. And I know that Brother Hinckley has said that on a number of occasions, including the interviews that he did with national media. So this goes back long before the most recent raid, but it was reemphasized in statements from headquarters in reaction to the publicity of that raid. But it's a long tradition of claiming an exclusive right to the name Mormon.
I don't know what was most important. Is the evangelical, especially the evangelical, because they're so important to the Republican Party, especially in Iowa, especially the evangelical reaction against Romney's Mormonism was an important factor, though there were also other factors. And there are guys who make a living telling you why people voted the way they did in the last election, and one explanation is about as good as another.
I'm from Texas, and I've got to tell you about a local newspaper article that came out during the time of the we had the fundamentalists in Amarillo Financial. But anyway, the judge, I live in Texas, I actually saw this article myself. The judge was informed that they were having trouble, that the families, they wanted to have a separate prayer time for the, you know, to pray with the children. And of course, the mothers were with them at that time, and they were afraid. The judge had been, you know, informed that they, that the mothers were using that time to influence the children, and you know, not using it just as a prayer time. And so the judge said, I would like to have someone monitor it. And we'll ask Mormon Church, you know, if they will come and monitor this. And so she you know, had to contact the Mormon Church, which was the state president in the area, and he responded, "Why did you ask me?" And of course, the Mormon Church wouldn't do it. But anyway, the Catholics stepped in. My husband checked on us, you know, checked it out. And he called the state president. Of course, after he said, "Why would you ask me? We're not going to do it." He called Salt Lake, and they, you know, told him not to get involved in it. But the other churches really stepped in, and it was very obvious in our media, on the TV, and in the papers. They went to Catholic places. Presbyterians took a lot of them down in Waco. But anyway, other churches really stepped up because they wanted the children to be in religious environments. Their mothers were with them at this point until the mothers got too much. But anyway, I just thought that was really a good media story.
Yeah, we wrote about that. Talk about a rock and a hard place. You know, the folks down there, for one thing, let's go to this. The fundamental ignorance Texas authorities about anything about the FLDS or the LDS or any other fragment of the church was apparent from the get-go. Now, I'm editorializing here, so this is not going to appear in print, although it was self-evident. And I can see where, you know, the LDS folks down there would say, it would be, you would almost be an agent of the state, right?
Well, I would have done it.
But you know, suppose you hear them
colluding in there with their children about how they can escape, you know, and secret messages.
You know, you would almost be considered an agent of the state, particularly in this particular situation. You know, I understand what you're saying. You would have done it. You're not LDS, I'm gathering, and the slippery slope is like vertical here. So I can't gainsay what the decision led to, because it was just too, it was too fraught.
Any more questions? We have one more.
I guess my question didn't go across. I'll add to it that have there been any lawsuits by people against the church? Or, I mean, say the media saying anything or printing anything against the church lately? And was there any for the Short Creek raid in 1954? And have there been any media lawsuit against the papers or any kind of media down in Texas there?
There's going to be a lawsuit in Texas against. There's going to be a lawsuit in Texas against the authorities. Almost sure. They'll say they exceeded their authority. The church gets sued nowadays. The ones that make the headlines are the suits for child abuse, where in say Catholics or Protestant churches, if a clergy person molests a child, the local congregation gets sued. In the LDS Church, since they have priesthood common to all men, if any man molests a child, then lawyers, especially in the Northwest, Washington and Oregon, say that's the church, just as if it were, say, a Catholic priest, born a priest, Catholic priest, and they sue the church, and they've had considerable success. They've gotten a bunch of money, and it makes a lot of publicity too. I don't think that in New Jersey they ought to have been hailing you into court on whether angels have wings. I think the First Amendment allows a person to believe in wings or no wings as he chooses. And I don't think we get, or anybody gets much sued about that anymore.
The only suits that I am aware of that are possible against the media are for libel. And libel is very difficult to establish, particularly when you're dealing with good intentions. And it's a question of the courts deciding, were the intentions of the newspaper editor or the reporter whose name may be attached as a byline, were those intentions malicious? Very difficult to prove. And so there virtually are no libel suits against the media for any purpose in any direction. I think the only organization that I know that has waged pitched battles against the media has been the Church of Scientology.
All right, well, that concludes our time. I'd like to thank the panel one more time.